This is the official Euro 2024 podcast.
Portugal came from behind and left it very late to beat Czechia in their Euro 2024 opener.
Conceição! Off the bench and into the headlines! One kick of the football and he's won it!
Turkey and Georgia played out one of the matches of the tournament so far.
And now there's nobody back. Aktürkoğlu with a chance to seal the deal for Turkey. Last kick of the game. Three goals, 3 points.
Three Wednesday games to preview as well.
Yes, Scotland meets Switzerland, Croatia play Albania, while Julian Nagelsmann helps preview Germany against Hungary. Hello, I'm Rob Daly and welcome to the Euro Show. I'm joined by my co-host Chris Parrott, as well as European football expert Andy Brassel. And Andy, what a dramatic start. Not long after the final whistle, Portugal with their victory.
Yeah, and they had to win it any which way they could, Rob. Very frustrating for them. Obviously had a lot of possession for the majority of the game, but the Czechs kept their shape brilliantly. And I think we've seen a lot of less fancy teams defending very, very well in this tournament so far. But Portugal found a way, and we saw the real depth of their squad, which is why a lot of people believe they're contenders for UEFA Euro 2024.
And we saw, Rob, some brilliant celebrations from the Portugal team as they went over to their supporters a couple of minutes ago. The Czechia players doing a whole lap of honour in Leipzig as well. They know how close they came to potentially a very important point as well. And we've now seen everybody in action. Only five of the 24 nations have failed to score. We've had nearly three goals per match in this first match day, with 34 goals and 34 different goal scorers, if you include the own goals. And one other extraordinary stat, really, is that more than 30% of the goals have been from outside the penalty area. It has been a tournament for wonder strikes so far.
Yeah, there have been some absolute crackers. There have been as well on Tuesday. It's been a great start to the tournament. And a reminder, we're on every night after the final match finishes, with the show also available as the official UEFA Euro 2024 podcast. We want you to be part of the show too. Get in touch via X at Euro 2024. Send us your thoughts on all the action and we'll read out some of your messages a little bit later. OK, let's review Tuesday then. Group F, the last to get underway in Germany. We've just had full time in Leipzig where Portugal face Czechia.
So foul. Fabulous hit! Fabulous goal! Lukas Provod with a diamond of a strike! Mendes, it's in! It's a mess of a goal! Mendes made it happen. Krnac may have had the telling touch on the line. Portugal have parity. Conceição! Off the bench and into the headlines! One kick of the football and he's won it!
A fine moment for young Francisco Conceição to score the winning goal. But let's go back to the start of the game, Andy, and this starting 11 that Roberto Martinez selected. What were your thoughts when the team news dropped?
Well, I think like most people watching it from Portugal, the question was what and how, I suppose, because it looked like a team where you couldn't quite work out what the formation was. In the end, it turned out that João Cancelo was playing as a midfielder and showed some interesting ideas in that. I suppose it was a little bit like Trent Alexander-Arnold playing in midfield for England. So there were some great bits to it, some not so great bits to it, but Roberto Martinez persevered with it for the entire game. That was interesting. But of course, we had to keep catching up with Portugal because they used their subs so prolifically. And of course, it was two subs that combined to get them the result they needed in the end.
The goal to make it 1-0 from Czechia, from Lukas Provod. We've, as Rob mentioned there, we've had some brilliant goals today, some extraordinary goals in the tournament. That was right up there though, wasn't it?
It really was, Chris. And I think the fact that it came from absolutely nowhere. It wasn't just a brilliant goal by Provod, but up until that point, it didn't look like the Czech Republic were creating anything, really. So, like I said, they defended very, very well up until that point, but they'd not really created anything of great note. So it was something extraordinary. It's a sort of magic, really, that you expect to come from Patrick Schick, isn't it? But it came from somewhere else.
We saw the goalkeeper push the ball onto Robin Hranac for the equaliser in the 69th minute, and that gave Portugal life, and they started to lay siege to the opposition goal. Before we get to those decisive late moments, lots of focus, unsurprisingly, Andy, on Cristiano Ronaldo. What did you make of his performance at the age of 39, of course?
Well, his longevity is extraordinary, of course. The sixth European Championship that he's been part of. And let's face it, he's going to score at some point. So it's going to be the sixth European Championship that he's going to score in. I can only underline my confidence in Cristiano Ronaldo. In the last UEFA Euro 2020, I was tasked with writing an article on Cristiano Ronaldo's longevity at these championships. And I wrote a piece on him scoring at his fifth successive European Championship. And I got to 6 minutes from the end of the game and I thought, hang on, he hasn't scored yet. But I believed so much in him doing so. I'd written this piece about him scoring. And, you know, I'm sure he'll do it again. He got himself in some really good spots tonight. I think there will be a question over whether he starts every game because Gonçalo Ramos, who's been brilliant in the second half of the season for Paris Saint-Germain, I think he will emerge at some point and play like he did in the last 16 of the FIFA World Cup against Switzerland. But Roberto Martinez does have those options, and Ronaldo has proved he's in fine fettle still.
He wasn't the only person making history as well this evening, Andy. Pepe, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's long-term friend at both national and at club level at Real Madrid, 41 years and 113 days, the oldest player to appear at a Euro. And rather frighteningly, that means he's 25 years older than Lamine Yamal, who became the youngest ever player on Saturday. I mean, how impressive was Pepe again, though, at the heart of this Portuguese defence?
Yes, and I think it's a slightly different task for him, Chris, playing in the UEFA Euro as opposed to playing in the UEFA Champions League, because he did so well with Porto, as you said, this season. But they, especially in the knockout games against more vaunted oppositions, played quite deep and then from there would try and counterattack. And of course, I think if you're a bit older, this is ideal for you, you know, if you're not forced to play a high line. Not that Pepe is any slouch. I don't think that's the case at all. But you know, it was definitely helpful. Sergio Conceição's tactics. We'll come to the younger Conceição in a little minute. But I think with Portugal, it's different because they're pressing to try and win the game. So that's a little bit different. But look, he didn't put a foot wrong tonight. I thought he was absolutely perfect. And Roberto Martinez has said time and time again in the build-up to this tournament and in the days leading up to this game that Cristiano and Pepe, that they are the players that I don't really need to do that much in the dressing room because they speak with their experience.
Ronaldo was actually offside for what looked like the Diogo Jota winner with just moments remaining. But they would get their goal, Chris, through another young star.
Yeah, and Andy just mentioned his dad, who scored a Euro hat-trick for Portugal against Germany in Euro 2000. But Francisco Conceição, Andy, that moment the cross came in, that the Czechia defender was kind of on the floor and it popped up nicely. But I think we heard Peter Drury's commentary. Pretty much his first touch, and he took the opportunity decisively, didn't he?
Yes, he did, Chris. And there's been a feeling in the little while leading up to the tournament that this could be a real platform for him, UEFA Euro 2024, because Francisco Conceição has had an increasingly good season with Porto. It hasn't been the greatest season for them. Of course, they're a team that expects to, and a club that expects to win trophies and have done since 1893, as the banner in the stands at the Dragão always says. But Conceição is a player who has had a bit of tough love from his dad, really. You know, he demands a lot from him as his club manager over the last little while. And what he's really added to his game is just incisiveness. He always had incredible ability on the ball. Dare I say it, better ability on the ball than his dad, despite him being a fantastic player, Sergio. But he's getting himself into more goal-scoring positions this season. And I think if you look at the warm-up match against Finland, he was absolutely fantastic in that. He was dovetailing really nicely with Portugal's best players, including Bruno Fernandes. And I think at this point now, you can tell he's ready to impact the game, even if he only gets a few minutes at the end. And that's exactly what he did.
It sparked wild celebrations in Leipzig. In truth, the Portugal fans were making their voices heard en route to the stadium.
Example of this kind of fans en masse walking towards the stadiums, and I think we have to remember not just for Czechia and Portugal, but also for Turkey and Georgia, who we'll get onto shortly. They've had to sit and watch and wait. You know, Friday seems ages ago for that opening game between Germany and Scotland, so they were not going to miss out on their Euro adventure, which will have at least two more group games for both of them.
Just look at some of the players Portugal didn't even use on the night: João Paulinho, Gonçalo Ramos, João Félix, Teus Núñez, Ruben Neves. Brilliant talent. Can Portugal build upon that victory? Vitinha, by the way, has had a standout season at club level, the official player of the match. Okay, the other match in Group F saw Turkey A take on tournament debutants Georgia.
And a shot blasted high into the roof. Kocharashvili trying to find a way through. Oh, they've got an equaliser! George Mikhail Tadze! That's an historic moment for Georgian football. Tetaishvili losing it. Ardu Gula now for Turkey. Wow, what a goal! A young star with a wonder strike. And now there's nobody back. Aktürkoğlu with a chance to seal the deal for Turkey. Last kick of the game.
Sensational ending to the match in particular. You heard Simon Brotherton on commentary for the 3-1 Turkey A victory. He was also alongside Lucy Ward, who joins us. Good evening, Lucy.
Evening, boys. You okay?
Good. Have you dried off yet?
Listen, I've had to walk back because it's a bit crazy coming back from the stadium. So it's just easier to walk, but we've got wet through, yeah.
All right. We'll try and be quick for you here. First of all, what a game. What a game.
Listen, I think I tweeted it, but at halftime I was thinking, this is just brilliant. And I think because you had two teams who were genuinely going for it, particularly in the first half, you had unbelievable goals. I don't think there was one bad performance at any of the players that were in the game. And everything happened. The post was hit. You had terrific goals. You had a last goalkeeper going up and then a last minute breakaway goal. And the atmosphere, I can't even explain to you the atmosphere, right, of the Turkish fans. The Georgian fans were outnumbered, but the Turkish fans were so loud. I can't even tell you. I have commentated for over 20 years and I've never, ever experienced that.
How impressed were you with Arda Güler, who was already a very popular man in Turkey before today, but will be even more so this evening?
Yeah, I just think he is obviously a rising star. I think that he is one of those where he makes things happen. He kept switching with Yilmaz from sort of right into the middle and back out again. But his goal, you just could see it coming. Just sort of cutting in from that right-hand side with his left foot. You know, you're talking about Mamaraş Dilic is unbelievable goalkeeper, and he didn't get anywhere near either goal, particularly that one, and it was crackers.
Can you talk to us about what Vincenzo Montella did with the scoreline at 1-1 at half-time? You mentioned some of that fluidity in the front line from Turkey.
Yeah, I think that what they did, I think he was a little bit worried at half-time that the game was getting a little bit transitional, so that they were giving Georgia a chance. And I think when they were giving Georgia under a chance, they were quite lethal in the final third. So I think that he was a little bit more measured, still with a high energy, a little bit more measured, still going for those combos down the sort of right and left. You know, Kadiolu, unbelievable young left back, left and right footed, went inside or outside, depending on where Yildiz went. And I just think when Calhanoglu dropped, it just triggered movement. So he dropped, like one of the fullbacks to go forward, whichever one it was, the other one dropped. And they all knew it was like, you know, it was like clockwork. And I think that they're very, very well drilled. And when you've got sort of a young core that are very exciting, I think that it just all worked for them. And they had some dodgy moments, you know, because I think you credit to Georgia. They were absolutely unbelievable with you know, a sort of mixed young side, young talent and experience. But I think Montella just wanted to try and drag that back five about. And, you know, they certainly pounced when they won the ball back high and for Gula's goal. And I think that was one of the things that he wanted them to do as well.
Turkey against Portugal next, which is going to be a thrilling game. From Georgia's point of view, that they play Czechia in Hamburg. How many positives can they take from this, even though they lost the game, going into what is now a crucial second game in the group for them?
I think they will. I mean, after the dust settles, maybe tomorrow, there's a lot of positives. My word, they were absolutely wonderful at times. And some of the players who just never stopped, it's just about recovery for them. But I think they learned a lot about themselves. I think they learned a lot about how they reacted to pressure, because that start, they just couldn't handle it. It was coming too fast in waves from Turkey. And I think once they sort of just passed, took that extra pass and got themselves into the game and then got themselves up the pitch and it was like, right, hang on, we can do this, they will just keep going and keep going. And you saw that tonight. So I think there are a lot more positives than negatives, if I'm honest. And you can break down the goals as well for sort of individual, you know, sort of closing down, losing the ball for Gula's. But you can't legislate for Mulder's goal either. So I think, you know, in the cold light of day, I think they will recognise that, you know, that they have made an imprint on this tournament, even though they didn't get the 3 points.
Lucy, we'll let you go warm up. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Brilliant. Thank you. Cheers, boys.
Lucy Ward on commentary for Turkey 3, Georgia 1. Lucy's right. They've made their impact on the competition, but surely there's a little bit of them. I mean, those final 5 minutes were fantastic, though, weren't they? With the goal line clearances and the shots.
Yeah.
It
was one of those games that you look on your phone or on social media, everyone's talking about it. And I don't mean Georgia or Turkey supporters. It's one of those tournament matches that people might just randomly be at home, or they start hearing it's good and they switch on, and you are utterly gripped to a compelling contest. It was as Lucy said, sometimes it defied logic, the game, but it was so good to watch.
Yeah, and a really good day to be a left-footed teenager in the Euros. I think it's fair to say, Chris. I mean, you know, there were so many places that the magic in this game could have come from. I think a lot of us were expecting Kvisha Kvaratskhelia, who had maybe a little bit of a frustrating game. He had his moments, but he couldn't quite dominate as people would have expected him to. And this, I think, underlined when club form is so important coming into a major championship, because Arda Güler has had quite a frustrating season at Real Madrid, but really played well towards the end of the season. Now, I think in a normal season, you would say, well, it's finished at the wrong time for him. He wants to carry on. He wants another 15 games, but he's getting his 15 games. Well, he kind of got 15 different games today. You know, so many different things happened in this match, but that he was able to find it a bit difficult at first, then come on and dominate in the second half was so, so impressive. And the calm that he has is, as Lucy was saying, remarkable.
Yeah, I've had some really nice messages in on X at Euro 2024 about Arda Güler. Norgul says, thank you, Fenerbahce. Thank you, Turkey. We're blessed to watch this talent. And Jack of All Tales says, surely he's a young player of the tournament contender. What can't be lost in all of this, Chris, is the historical context for the Georgia national team.
Yeah, ultimately not their first Euro point yet. That may well come in the coming days, but remember, this is the first ever major tournament, Euro or FIFA World Cup, that they have qualified for. The national anthem and the pride in the stadium in Dortmund was so obvious to hear and see. And it is a historic day for them, even if it ended in defeat. But I do think, as Lucy said, when they analyse it, they will see just how close they came to getting a point. And yes, the goalkeeper came up, which is where the third goal came from, but he was in the box causing a nuisance when they hit the post and then had that shot cleared off the line. So they were brilliantly entertaining, and they've already brought an awful lot to this Euro. And now the next step, of course, is to go into the next two games and look for 3 or 4 points, which could still send them through to the round of 16.
Czechia, beware. They faced Georgia next. Turkey captain Hakan Çalhanoğlu doesn't want his team to get too carried away with the win.
My feelings are great now. Of course, it was our first game. It was the important game for us to open the tournament as good as possible. And now we have two other difficult games. We know that Portugal is a favourite team in our group, but in football is everything possible. So we try and we go on.
Proper captain already looking ahead to the next game. Turkey will play Portugal in their second match. OK, coming up, we're going to preview the three matches on Wednesday as match day two of Euro gets underway.
Few major competitions do more than the Euros to ensure their benefits last far beyond the final tournament. Since 2004, our hat-trick programme has been distributing two-thirds of every Euro's net revenue across Europe's 55 football associations to fund development projects. These benefits touch every level of the football pyramid. In communities, it pays for mini-pitches, grassroots club development, football in schools and disability football projects. At the top, hat-trick has helped associations build more than 60 stadiums and training centres. Euro 2024 will build on more than 800 projects already delivered over 20 years of hat-trick. Over the next 4 years, 935 million euros of the tournament's revenue will help leave a lasting legacy across the continent.
A reminder as well to download the official Euro 2024 app.
Yeah, this show live on there every night. And of course now, Rob, given match day two is upon us,
oh, yeah,
is the time to make transfers if you've had a bit of a shocker at the start of the game like I have. This
yeah,
is a chance
too.
For a bit of a clean slate to look at some of those players who have done really well and maybe put them in.
We'll look ahead to Wednesday's matches shortly. But first, here's the news elsewhere from day five of the tournament. Kylian Mbappe does not need immediate surgery after suffering a broken nose in the win over Austria. He will have a mask made, confirmed the president of the French Football Federation. Philippe Diallo says it would be premature to give a timeline on his recovery. It remains to be seen whether Mbappe can play against the Netherlands on Friday.
Serbia star Filip Kostic does look set to miss the rest of the tournament through injury, though. The Juventus winger came off in their defeat to England and damaged knee ligaments, an injury that will keep him out for between 3 and 4 weeks.
Better news for Poland fans, their squad had a bike ride through the woods at their base camp near Hanover, where head coach Michał Probierz and Robert Lewandowski were seen cycling alongside each other and chatting. The Barcelona star missed their opener against the Netherlands through injury, but hopes to be back for their clash with Austria on Friday.
And Italy's Giacomo Raspadori has had his say on who are the favourites for Euro 2024. Speaking before the defending champions face Spain on Thursday, the Napoli forward has claimed that France and England have the best individual players, but he added the beauty of football is that other factors also count.
So every nation has now played at least once at Euro 2024. So match day two gets underway on Wednesday, and good news, we're back to our three games a day schedule. If you, like me, have been on the sofa just watching every single match.
Yep, and today missed it as well. Hang on, where's the football? But it is back. And all eyes once more will be on the host, because Germany, one of those teams who potentially could make it through with a game to spare after that win over Scotland in their first match.
Yeah, head coach Julian Nagelsmann will be hoping for more of this.
Space for Fiat! What a save! Off the post! lights the fuse to illuminate Euro 2024.
Yeah, brilliant victory. Let's head across to our reporter in the Germany camp now. UEFA's Philipp Ruber joins us. Philipp, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. How's it going?
Very good, thank you. Day before the game, whereabouts are you right now?
Yeah, I traveled to Stuttgart today from the Germany base camp just near Nuremberg. It's a quick 2.5 hour journey. Now I'm sitting in the Stuttgart stadium up high. Found myself a nice little secluded spot. So I could join you on the show.
Oh, perfect. That's great to hear. Right, first of all, obviously won on opening night, 5-1 victory against Scotland. Are there any question marks in terms of changing the team for the next game?
I don't think so. I asked Julian Nagelsmann today whether there were any doubtful players or injured players, and he said everyone is fit. And he's not made any secret out of lineup questions in the past. And today, you know, it seems pretty clear that that he wants that side to be rehearsed and to even improve in terms of how they're functioning on the pitch. So I don't think he will make any changes at all.
Philipp, stay with us because we can hear some of your interview now with Julian Nagelsmann.
I think it's important that we find some things to improve it. So it's always like that at the end. We find some detailed things about our plan, but we adapt a little bit the plan for the Hungary team. It's not the same like the plan against the Scottish team. And we always try to find some things we did well against the Scottish team, and we can do it the same way like the Hungary team. So there are some things, but at the end, when you win a game 5-1, normally you have to be satisfied, and we're like that.
I thought you were surprisingly open before the Scotland match about certain tactics that you were using. You said that you wanted to beat their offside trap, and you said that you wanted to avoid crosses, and all that worked out pretty well. What can you reveal to us about tactical details for Hungary then?
I have a really clear plan in ball possession. I don't want to talk about it in detail because it could be too easy for the opponent's coach now to analyze it when you see this interview. But at the end, they tried to build some numbers up and clear spaces of them, and then they find the weak side and do it with crosses. They do not have that many players in our box like the Scottish team, but it's still dangerous because they're really good in header. Vaga, Adam, doesn't matter who will play there and offensive line, they're all good with this head. And so we have to avoid crosses as well. I think we have a big chance to create chances in nearly the same spaces like we did against the Scottish team.
Philipp, with the hard-hitting questions to Julian
trying
Nagelsmann.
To get the tactics.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. One on Nagelsmann, Philipp, because he took over in September. I guess this Euro so far is the longest that he's had these players on the training pitch. Are you seeing kind of evolution and improvement each time that Germany play?
I think so, yes. If you look a bit at the start of the preparation period, they have these two friendly games against Greece and against Ukraine, and you could sense that, you know, it was the early stages of preparation. They definitely made a huge step forward in against Scotland, and we saw something similar back in March also. Obviously, that is considered like the start and like the beginning of this team trying to gel. He has the perfect conditions in Herzogenaurach at their base camp. We get to see it, if only, you know, for 15 minutes each day, but we do get to see what they've created. This was exactly the base camp that they used 3 years ago, and I was there at that time as well. And it's, yeah, they've definitely made, not in terms of location, but also the training facilities. They've made a huge step forward, and it seems to all work out to plan. The guys are having fun. They're enjoying the squad that he's assembled, and he assembled it thinking about different roles for each player. And yeah, that seems to be working out perfectly.
Philipp, I know you wanted to pick out Florian Wirtz and Jamal Musiala, superb on Friday. And a bit of a comparison with the Germany team that hosted the FIFA World Cup in 2006.
Yeah, 2006 and 2008 at the Euro back then in Austria and Switzerland. Those were like the first two tournaments that Lukas Podolski and Bastian Schweinsteiger really came to the fore and excited this nation. They were, you know, I stood for like a new type of football back then. Germany had a few years before that where the football wasn't really that exciting. And now the football was exciting, but also, you know, off the pitch, Schweinsteiger and Podolski, they were quite colorful characters. So they were a lot of fun. And it's similar like that with Wirtz and Musiala. I think they seem to be getting along pretty well together. And the German FA, they even sent them to a press conference. So they were sitting next to each other on press conference and bouncing questions off of each other. So yeah, there's definitely some, you know, some comparisons that could be made, but it's probably a bit too early. Obviously, Lukas Podolski and Bastian Schweinsteiger, they went on to become world champions. So I think Wirtz and Musiala, they've got a pretty decent chance of adding a big trophy here in the next few weeks. And then we'll see if that comparison is worth something.
Philip, you were with the team in Munich. This game against Hungary is in Stuttgart. And I guess you're kind of on the ground feeling the temperature of a whole nation. Just how enthused by the start on Friday are kind of the greater German public about this team and what they might be able to do between now and July the 14th?
Yeah, I think the general feeling here is that they couldn't have asked for a better start. Not just the 3 points, but also, you know, lots of goals and maybe winning back some of those fans that were a little bit on the fence because of not so great performances, especially towards the end of last year, but also more in the broader sense at recent big tournaments where Germany had really, you know, since 2016, they haven't managed to go past the round of 16 at a big tournament. So that was one big step, and you could definitely feel in terms of headlines and media coverage that euphoria is picking up. And it's exactly what they aimed for, but they will have to make a next step here in Stuttgart against Hungary, and then at the next match in Frankfurt against Switzerland as well. I think if they manage to do that and they get out of this group with 9 points and more convincing performances like against Scotland, then I think we could have something that will be compared to the infamous summer's tale of 2006 when Germany held such a wonderful World Cup here.
Okay, let's wait and see. Philip, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Our Germany reporter, Philip Rober, speaking. This is what we want, isn't it?
Yep.
We've got our reporters in the team camps. They're dialed in.
Yeah, not just that, as you heard, literally asking the coaches, the players, questions on a daily basis. They are living and breathing this tournament alongside those teams. And I think, and I hope the listeners agree, giving it a real insight, actually, into what all of the 24 nations are thinking and feeling ahead of these huge games in the tournament.
Well, let's speak about another one of those, Hungary. Marco Rossi, their head coach, said, "I hope we can grab a point and keep our hopes of advancing alive." He also admitted that his team made too many mistakes in the 3-1 loss to Switzerland as they opened up their Euro campaign. But Andy Brassel, who's with us, there's a lot of hope because of recent history between Hungary and Germany.
Yeah, you go back to 3 years ago, Rob, and in match day 3 in Munich, Hungary got a draw there. And you know what? If Marco Rossi's hoping for that, maybe he's secretly hoping for something better, because they were very close to beating Germany that night. It took a Leon Goretzka equaliser to get Germany a point. And, you know, Hungary had started that tournament slowly, but the two games that they played in Budapest in that tournament gave them something in terms of energy. So they lost the opener 3-0 to Portugal with those late goals by Cristiano Ronaldo, as we were saying. But they got a draw against France, or one of the tournament favourites, as they always are in the following game. And it really boosted them. Now, it was funny, Andreas Schäfer, who's still playing for them, who played in that tournament, who scored against Germany in Munich 3 years ago, he was reliving that goal and saying, well, it'd be great to do it all over again. I think there's an acknowledgement, even though they are second favourites, that they've been there, done it, and that they have the sense that they can make things difficult for Germany, and they can grow into a tournament as they did 3 years ago.
And there's been some good vibes. They did a press conference with kids, Andy, at their base in the south of Germany. That they don't appear to be a team who are feeling the pressure ahead of this game.
No, they're there to enjoy it, I think, Chris. And, you know, that has created their winning mentality. The Hungarian FA, as you said, invited some children to the training camp where they asked Petr Gulácsi and a couple of other players questions. Of course, the sort of tactics that they're going to use against Germany, but stuff like their favourite food and how you might become a professional footballer.
There's and a young Philip Robert in there somewhere.
Maybe. I mean, I think the advice about how to become a professional footballer might come a little bit late for this particular tournament. There are no places left in Rossi's 26. But look, I think if he makes any changes from that first game, I think they'll probably be minor because they were a bit slow starting in the first half, as you said, Rob. I thought they responded brilliantly after the break against Switzerland. And, you know, it took that Brel and Bolo goal to really kill the game off, and a great goal it was. But I think because he's been in charge for 6 years, remember, Rossi, he's got a really long relationship with Hungarian football. He's been coaching almost continuously in the country, if we're going back to his club-level jobs, for over a decade. So I think he trusts those players. And he'll say, what happened in the first half, in that first game, forget about it. Let's go into this one and be positive.
Andy mentioned Switzerland there. Let's look at their next game next in Group A. Against Scotland, they had very contrasting results in their opening matches, remember.
Bolo sniffing around. He's lost his boot, but kept his composure to ensure that the Swiss are off to a winning start at the Euro.
Yeah, that goal made it 3-1 and killed that Hungarian fight back. Quick one, Andy. Is there any chance that Brel Embolo, who's been injured for essentially the whole season, an ACL injury, is there any chance after his goal off the bench that he's pushing for a start?
There's always a chance, Rob, but I think it's unlikely. And I think when you look at the great match put in by Quadradua, there's no massive push to bring him back. The thing people were most concerned about in Switzerland before the tournament as regards to the national team is where do the goals come from? Well, there's been a great response to that. Duarte did really well. I think you look at the link with Ebisher, which was absolutely fantastic. They really clicked together. And to have Mbolo able to come off the bench and provide a different problem for tiring defenders, I think is a great advantage.
We heard from Manuel Akanji today talking about how they are not going to underestimate any team at the Euros, let alone Scotland. But they've put themselves in a really brilliant position thanks to that win on match day one.
Yeah, they have done, Chris. And I know it's been said before, not least by UEFA's technical advisors who gave him man of the match, but you feel that Granit Xhaka is just in the best moment of his career, that he is the leader that they need at this very moment. And he was again in that opening game. Wherever you put him on the pitch, he's an extraordinary example to his teammates. And given that Switzerland have a very, very difficult qualifying campaign, they seem like a different team here. Yeah. And he is a huge part of that.
What did they learn from the last Euro, Andy? But he obviously had their incredible comeback win against France and only went out in the quarters on penalties to Spain.
Yeah, they did. And they were unfortunate. And I think what they proved, and as Swiss sides have proven so many times over the years, is that they can weather the storm in really difficult moments of a game. I think if you go back to Euro 2020, in that game where they knocked Switzerland out on penalties, it was probably 25, 30 minutes of that game where France played the best football of the tournament. But Switzerland really managed to hang in there. I mean, this will be a completely different challenge, of course, because they go into this game against Scotland facing a different sort of pressure. And not just because Scotland lost in that first game so convincingly to Germany, but regardless of that, Switzerland are emphatically the favourites in this. So that's something different to deal with.
Yeah, and of course, they will be very well backed in Cologne, but so will Scotland, and they are already making themselves heard outside the famous cathedral in the German city. I mean, Andy, they were magnificent in Munich ahead of the opening game, and then didn't get quite the performance to match.
Yeah, but Andy Robinson was talking about that. Yeah,
exactly. But, I mean, this is still a massive occasion for Scotland. And what do you think they will have learnt from the Germany game to bring into this Swiss game?
Well, I think start better has got to be the obvious one, really. And Steve Clarke talked about that, you know, that everything they tried, and he's taken his responsibility for it as well, just didn't work. They were just not quite as zesty as you would have expected. But look, they'll want to respond. It seems to me that the spirits around the Scotland squad are pretty good. They've digested the disappointment of that defeat, and they're moving on from there. And as I know you guys both know, Cologne is really the home of football optimism in Germany. So what a great place
to launch
a comeback in the UEFA Euro.
Absolutely right. But by the way, the weather forecast, we've had a fair bit of rain, haven't we, in Germany? Thunderstorms, hail and wind. It's not kilt weather, is it? Is it really?
No, and I heard... Or I saw Marek Yakin talking about this today, saying, well, yeah, maybe that will actually suit the Scotland players more. We saw very heavy rain actually tonight in Leipzig. It's not quite the wall-to-wall sunshine you expect in June.
No, it's very true. Okay, let's hear from Scotland's captain, Andy Robertson, who says they've put their opening day defeat to Germany behind them.
We've got two games left in a three-game league, effectively, and you know you're not done after the first game, that's for sure. It wasn't pretty, it wasn't nice, and you know it hurt for a good 24 hours, but then we drew a line under it. If you dwell on it for too long, then you know you can't move forward, and that's what we have to do. And we have to get a better performance, a better result tomorrow night, that's clear. Well, if we do that, then all of a sudden, you know, maybe our position doesn't look too bad, but we have to go out and do that first.
And quickly, Chris, a question as to who plays in defence alongside Andy Robertson after the red card and subsequent suspension of Ryan Porteous.
Yeah, two-game suspension for Ryan Porteous. That was confirmed yesterday, wasn't it? Grant Hanley came on at half-time in Munich. Scott McKenna also came off the bench. So Steve Clarke has got a definitely got a decision there to make as they go into what is a crunch game for Scotland.
Still to come, we'll preview Croatia's match with Albania.
Euro 2024 in Germany has sustainability at its core. All group stage matches have been organised to reduce travel, with teams travelling by train rather than plane as much as possible. If you're lucky enough to have tickets for this summer's tournament, you can play your part too by taking the train to matches, with discounted train travel across Germany for all ticket holders.
And a reminder to check your fantasy football score now by heading to the official Euro 2024 app. The app is the place to get all the info you need for the coming weeks in Germany. OK, the first of tomorrow's three matches is actually from Group B, and it is a vital game in Hamburg.
It is. Both Croatia and Albania were beaten in their first matches, and in what is a very tough section with Spain and Italy, remember, they will be desperate to get at least a point on the boards.
Yeah, let's head to the Croatia camp now and join our reporter, Elvir Islamovic. Elvir, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, great to have you on for the first time this competition. News today that Nikola Vlasic will leave Euro because of a muscle injury. We'll start with that. How big a miss is he going to be?
Well, to be honest, it was a bit complicated situation with Vlasic because he was already injured this year. I think he picked an injury in May. And first medical exam showed that he would probably missed Euro, but then he managed to recover very quickly in just a few weeks, just in time to join the team at the end of May. And Dalic was waiting for him because he was kind of an important piece of the Croatian puzzle before. He was several years with the team, and he's a really good guy and a really quality player. So Dalic gave him a chance. He was waiting for him until the last moment, and then it seemed that he recovered fully. He joined the team. He started with 100% fitness trainings, and he joined the team in the preparations already in Croatia. So everything looked good. But then, you know, I really didn't know that something happened here, because we just suddenly received the news today, because we were counting the players like we are always do at the training sessions to see if somebody is missing. And then one player was missing, and we were actually trying to say the names of the players among the new media to see who's gone. And then we received the news that Vlasic is actually missed the training because of just as a precaution. First, he was doing like a fitness training, so obviously they didn't want to put the official news right away. And then this morning we get the confirmation that it's obviously something more difficult, and because of that injury he need to leave the team, and he's already, I think, on his way back to Croatia.
Clearly that is going to be a blow. Is there better news on Ivan Perisic, who we saw coming on in Berlin? Of course, he went back to his boyhood club, Hajduk Split, last season, had that awful injury. Do you think he is now fit to start? And if so, how big a boost would that be for Croatia?
Well, that's the really good question. And I honestly can't give you a right answer, because we would all love to see Perisic start, because he's really, really, really important for Croatia. Not only his experience, his skills, he's really one of the biggest professionals I ever met. I did a lot of interviews with him, and he was always right on time. He's always very disciplined, and on the pitch, he's showing that actually as one of the top Croatia players ever. He's obviously a big miss, but you know, I'm not sure if he can handle all 90 minutes. But then, in that case, he can maybe start and play until 60 or 65th minute, or maybe he can enter the pitch as a substitution, maybe in the second half. So really, really not sure about that. But there is one option for this match. We're speculating with the first 11 for Albania. And there is actually an option that Perisic could start on the left back. So that would be, that's not the news for Croatia. He used to play that a few times, but in this case, he would jump in not on the left wing. He would jump in on the left back instead of Guardiol, who would move from the left back in the middle, in the central defender position, where actually he feels the best, I think. So that's one possible change in the lineup for the match tomorrow.
And Elve, a quick one to finish. Given Croatia's final game is, of course, against Italy, do you think, and does the Croatian public think, that they need to win this game if they are to make it through to the round of 16?
Well, the good news there is, you know, like, we really know how to play against Italy, and we never lost against Italy. But, you know, it's really difficult when you depend on the match against, you know, former European champions in the last match. So not the best possible situation, but well, from my experience, Croatia will probably be the best in that last match.
Elvir, great insight from within the camp. Really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Speak soon, I hope.
Our Croatia correspondent Elvir joining us on the show. And we discussed this man with Elvir there as well. Ivan Perisic, here's his thoughts ahead of the game.
Must-win game tomorrow. We didn't do well in the first game, and we have to change something for tomorrow. They are a good team. We saw also some clips from the qualifications, and we know them, and we're gonna keep something for us, and be ready for tomorrow.
It will be fascinating if he plays at left back in a back four. We know him as a wing back from Inter and his time at Spurs, but left back in a back four would be a big call for Croatia if they went with that.
Yeah, I mean, one of their golden generation. Can they get him in from the start? We shall see. Andy, from Albania's point of view, took the lead against Italy, played really well. Do you think they will make any changes for this game?
Well, Silvino's been a little bit cagey about that, the coach, Chris. He said he's thinking about it, it's fair to say. And he's very, very big on fitness. So I think he wants to judge exactly how his players are right up until the last training session, because he always demands a massive physical effort. I mean, if you look at him, he looks as if he could still play himself sometimes. He's one of these guys a little bit like when you see Cafu in the UEFA Legends match or the UEFA Champions League final. But I think the most obvious change is to bring in Raymond I, because he was really pleased, Silvino, with the way they played in that first game, but they just didn't get enough shots off. Now, Silvino has been reasonable about his team. And he said, well, look, we didn't attack more because Italy wouldn't let us. And they're one of the very best teams in the tournament, which I don't think a lot of people would argue with. But Manai is someone who doesn't hang about, who likes to take shots, who's just come off the back of a very, very good goal scoring season from Sivasspor, as well as having that pedigree from Barcelona.
And you mentioned him there. Let's hear from the Albania head coach, Silvino.
That's the beautiful part of football. In 90 minutes can happen everything. You respect the other side. They are really strong. But you have to play fair, really fair. Try to play, to running, to leave everything inside the pitch. Respect the other players, but nothing should be worried. You have to play. They are strong. Yes, they are favourite. Yes, but you have to go there and try to play the best one.
Silvino speaking ahead of Albania's game with Croatia, a 100% fit squad available for the game. Speaking of Albania, let's chat about our favourite moments from Euro 2024 so far. And Andy, the early goal from Albania on match day one against Italy is your favourite so far.
Federico Di Marco with the throw, and it's a really terrible one as he gets it away. Oh, it's an outstanding start.
Yeah, 23 seconds to be precise, the fastest goal in UEFA Euro history, which is unbelievable. And what was even better than the goal by Bayrami, I felt, was the reaction. I mean, the Albanian supporters were stars in UEFA Euro 2016. I remember being at the game at Lyon, where they won their first game at a major tournament, beating Romania in the final game. And they celebrated it. There were about 40,000 Albanians in the stadium, which was remarkable anyway, and many coming over the border from Switzerland. And then all the players were celebrating it for a couple of hours afterwards. And this is what international football means, and this is what this competition means. And Bayrami gave them reason to hope, and they've still got reason to hope.
Yeah, they were excellent. I actually struggled for my moment because there have been an awful lot. I mean, more than 30 goals. Nearly
full
three.
Disclosure, we picked them before today, and you might have one from today's action.
Yeah, I know, but I have gone for this one. It is still a cracker.
Oh, Musiala showing the quality. Look at that! Niklas Füllkrug with his first attempt to score a fourth goal for Germany tonight.
So I picked this because there is something about a host nation getting off to a winning start and kind of illuminating the tournament, and it almost felt like this was the moment where you just knew it was a perfect night for them, given they brought him on and he scored with his first touch. And I think he hit it at more than 120 kilometres an hour. It was one of those finishes that once it leaves the player's boot, you know it's just going to fly into the back of the net. And it wasn't the last goal, but it felt like it summed up Germany's utter dominance of that opening match.
Niklas Füllkrug with the goal, and we'll stick with players in their 30s for my favourite moment so far.
Throw in for the Danes. Alexander Bahr happy to take it quickly. Lovely flick on. Eriksen is in! What about that? Christian Eriksen! Top international scorer in this Danish squad. And he has done it again!
Yeah, it had to be my favourite moment. Christian Eriksen scoring the opener in that 1-1 draw with Slovenia. And yes, Denmark did not win the game, but we were all aware of the context that 3 years ago, Christian Eriksen had his cardiac arrest on the pitch at Euro in their opening game. And he was great after, you know, talking not only about his personal context. I've already played more than I did at the previous Euro, but just seeing it in the broader context of this team and being quite selfless, which is kind of... it's kind of the player he is, isn't it, really?
Agreed. I do you know what? I picked mine first and then I saw which one you'd picked, Rob, and I must have thought, yeah, you have won this one, actually.
There's been a few. Let's quickly turn our attention back to what we've seen this evening. A reminder, Turkey beating Georgia by 3-1 and Portugal leaving it late to see off Czechia by 2-1. Their head coach, Roberto Martinez, is keen to focus on the positives after that last-minute winner.
For us, it was a test of character. Obviously, you look at the stats, you got 70% of possession, you got 13 corners, you can see a lot of good work, but obviously the aspect is to accept that you are 1-0 down, you need to control the nerve, and I think the character that we showed today was incredible. It's something that's going to help us a lot to grow.
Moeen on X has been in touch as well, at Euro 2024. A brilliant end to another fabulous game. And lots to look forward to, Andy Braswell. Thanks for your input tonight. Final question to you. Which match from match day two are you most looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to all of them, Rob, but the one really for me is the first one between Croatia and Albania, because it's so difficult to read what's going to happen. Obviously, Croatia have got some making up to do, and Albania, they're going to make it really, really tough for them.
There's two, I think. Spain, Italy, for obvious reasons, and Netherlands, France as well. I mean, if you said both of those are semi-finals or quarter-finals, you wouldn't argue. Yeah, I mean, we have got some corking games to look forward to in the coming days.
Yeah, England-Denmark stands out as well. And, of course, we'll be with you providing all the reaction across Euro 2024.
We certainly will. Thank you for listening. We're on air every match night, moments after the final game, on the Euro 2024 app and, of course, at Euro2024.com around 11 p.m. CEST. The show also available as the official podcast. Please subscribe using your favourite podcast provider.
We've got three games to look forward to on Wednesday as match day two gets underway. Croatia take on Albania, host Germany, face Hungary, and Scotland are back in action again in Cologne as they take on Switzerland. Some nations can go through to the last 16 as well. And on our next edition of the show, we're going to review all those matches and look ahead to Thursday as well. The action keeps on coming. Don't miss it. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the official Euro 2024 podcast, an IMG production for UEFA.